Okay, our next presentation today will be a group presentation in which we will hear from Vicky Gomez, Elizabeth Greenblatt, Sarah Marin, and Laura Miller. I'd like to invite them to the podium. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Elizabeth Greenblatt, and our presentation is about a community assessment that we completed with Legal Services for Prisoners with Children of children's access to health care at two mother-child prison programs in California. And we have no relationships to disclose. So I would like it if you could all close your eyes and imagine that you are a mother who has just become incarcerated. Think about some of the emotions that you may be feeling. You find out that you will actually be sentenced to a facility where you will get to serve your time with your child. And you actually feel fortunate about this, because not many women get to go to these types of facilities. So once getting to this facility and being there for a little while, your child starts to get sick, and your child is experiencing painful headaches and vomiting. And when you approach the staff, you tell them what's going on, and they don't believe you. They tell you that you're overreacting, and they say that your daughter is overreacting. So this continues. Your child continues to get sick, continues to have headaches, continues to vomit. And during this time, the staff at this facility has meetings about your child and determines that your child is not sick, but is having a behavioral problem. Finally, after your child experiencing these headaches and vomiting for over a month, you're allowed to take your child to the doctor after you asking over and over and over again. And when you do, you learn that your child has a malignant brain tumor. Unfortunately, this is a real story from a woman who was at the Family Foundations program, one of the programs that we looked at in this assessment. And this story and other women's stories like this are one of the reasons that we chose, and Legal Services for Prisoners with Children chose, to look at this issue and make it a priority in the work that they were doing. So, Legal Services for Prisoners with Children, this is their mission, and as you can see, they work for the human rights and empowerment of incarcerated parents, children, family members, anyone that's at risk for incarceration. And they really focus on women prisoners, and they really make sure that they're looking at issues of race and how they interact with incarceration. So in our assessment, we actually looked at two different programs. So I just want to explain a little bit about both of them. As you can see, this is the Community Prisoner Mother Program. This is one of the mother-child prison programs in California. And it's a drug and alcohol community-based rehabilitation prison program. And women actually have to apply to this program. They're not sentenced directly to it. They apply to it, and then, as you can see, there are three locations. They can have up to two children with them. And the children have to be under six, and they can be there for a maximum of 6 years. And you can see there's a total of 75 beds spread out throughout the programs. The other program is the Family Foundations program. And the main difference with this is that women are sentenced directly to Family Foundations, and they can only be there for up to a year. The other thing that I just want to note is that we will be talking about both the Community Prisoner Mother Program and the Family Foundations programs throughout the presentation, but we will be using the acronyms, CPMP and FFP. And also, our assessment looked at two of these programs. So we looked at the Community Prisoner Mother Program in Oakland and the Family Foundations Program in San Diego. Another thing that I want to mention is that both of these programs have existed for a while, over 10 years, and there's never been an evaluation done on any of the programs. So here we can see some of the goals of the programs. One of the main ones is to reduce recidivism rates. So again, ideally, women would not become incarcerated again. And here's just a quote from a woman who used to be a project manager at the CPMP in Oakland. So looking at the fact that it's important that mothers get to be with their children. And then a CDR official stated it as sort of breaking that cycle. So the purpose of our assessment that we created with LSPC was to explore the impact that the Community Prisoner Mother Program and the Family Foundations Program policies and practices had on children's access to quality health care while living with their incarcerated mothers. So in terms of the sort of methods that we employed, we did key informant interviews, and you know, as you can see, we sort of gathered from a variety of people that had a variety of different experience with the Family Foundations Program as well as CPMP. And then we did surveys and follow-up interviews with the women. So we actually sent surveys to women inside the facilities, and then they could opt to do an in-depth interview with us, and we would come back and interview them. And we did a total of, we received back a total of 22 surveys, and then based on those surveys, we did 14 interviews. We interviewed a diverse group of women, and the women range in age from about 18 to 35 years of age. And then I also just want to mention that, you know, this was a convenient sample, and we also really employed snowball sampling, and that once women got the surveys, they talked to other women in the facility, and that's how they got to participate. So next we're going to talk about the actual findings, and Sarah Maureen is going to do that.
Okay, so as Elizabeth talked about, our team employed three different tools throughout this needs assessment, and the data analysis of these three tools basically outlined the healthcare experiences of children living in these programs, the real disparities that children face in terms of access to quality care, and then also how much these findings really differ from what the American Academy of Pediatrics sets out as their recommendations for children. So if you'll take a look at the graph above, this is showing where women at FFP in San Diego are accessing healthcare for their children. And you'll see that 50% of mothers are accessed care for their children at emergency rooms, which we believe may be correlated to the fact that they're not accessing care in a timely fashion. And then at CPMP, the answers that we received were a little bit all over the map in terms of where mothers were accessing care for their children, but we did notice that 24% were accessing care on site, although that's rather peculiar because this is the facility that doesn't have any medical personnel. So the first finding outlines how unlicensed and untrained staff made medical decisions. So mothers at CPMP did not have access to a nurse or a doctor on site, as I mentioned, which basically meant that the staff members that were available were left to make medical decisions whether or not they were qualified to do so. And then mothers at FFP did have access to a nurse on site, although they mentioned that that person was often unavailable to them. So the next two findings outline how staff dehumanize mothers in a variety of circumstances. We found that mothers didn't take staff concerns seriously, or staff didn't take mothers' concerns seriously when they say that their child needed medical attention. And one of the mothers shared her frustration by saying, and I have a quote from her, quote, "Earlier this year, my baby was one of eight that caught RSV, a respiratory virus. They refused to let us take the babies to the hospital. They said we were all lying. She stopped breathing twice here, and they still wouldn't let me take her to the hospital. The second time she stopped breathing was in front of them, and then they finally let her go. They said I was overreacting. They refused to acknowledge that RSV was a problem until eight babies were hospitalized." Unquote. So this is just one example among many that we found, that we saw how mothers were not treated as either competent or credible. The following finding shows that mothers had little or no control over the child's health care or medical decisions and were dissatisfied with the level of care that they received. 63% of mothers at CPMP and 100% of mothers at FFP felt that they had no control over the child's health care decisions. So a lot of the mothers talked about having to go through a lot of layers just to get their child to the doctor. It wasn't as easy as being able to make a doctor's appointment and take their child in when they felt that they needed it. At both CPMP and FFP, there was a significant delay between when children would present symptoms and when they would actually receive care. So this finding, I think, oops, Thank you. I think this finding is really evidenced in the example that Elizabeth talked to you guys about with the child who had, you know, experienced, you know, a lot of pain and then later was, you know, diagnosed with a malignant brain tumor. This was a huge issue at FFP. Again, 100% of women expressed concern over the delay in care that their children received. The next couple of findings address the policies and procedures with regards to access to care. And again, this is at both CPMP and FFP. At both facilities, no children's healthcare information is actually distributed to mothers upon arrival. So women don't really know what the protocol is for accessing care for the children. And key informants were also not aware of any information that's given to women either upon their arrival or at any point during their stay there. At both CPMP and FFP, there was no uniform policy-making body that sets the standards or makes changes when policies are ineffective. Key informants had a variety of different answers for how to change an ineffective policy, and those answers often conflicted. Some of them talked about having to go to program staff with complaints, and others mentioned that they would need to file a formal complaint with the CDCR, the Corrections Department, but the answers were really all over the map. And lastly, outside of immunizations, there were no specific guidelines for accessing medical care for children. Again, we found 100% of key informants agreed that there were no set standards around this issue, which really highlights many of the findings throughout this assessment. One key informant, who's actually a former incarcerated woman, had spent time at a couple of the facilities, talked about the lack of structured guidelines, and she said, quote, "There must be a streamlining of the process. You can't wait to take kids to the hospital. No one gave a child with a temperature of 104 any attention. She had a seizure and was paralyzed for a week. There have to be more clear, better boundaries. There must be empathy and compassion, since women don't have much control over their lives while living inside," unquote. And now Laura Miller is going to talk about additional key findings.
Okay, so while our assessment focused on children's access to healthcare, there were two additional key findings that are important to mention from our assessment. The first is the nutritional deficit in the programs. The food was lacking nutritional value overall for children. There was no children's menu available, and there was no alternative options if the child couldn't eat something on the menu. Maybe it was something that was spicy or too starchy or too fatty. There was continual food shortages. There was lack of fresh fruit, fresh vegetables in these programs, and also a lack of milk and juice. And the mothers questioned, all of the mothers had access to WIC and food stamps. And the mothers were questioning what was happening to the food that's supplied by these programs because they were in continuous shortage. The other additional finding that we found was that there's an excess of mold and dust at these facilities. At CPMP, the mold was so bad that when our team went in to speak to the women, the staff there had been told to spray paint over some of the windows so that we couldn't see it. And at FFP, the mold and dust was so bad that the women there have dubbed their children's chronic cough as the FFP cough. So one of the mothers summed up the overall attitudes of these programs when she said, "Our kids should not have to suffer till they're almost dead. I hate it here, but I would rather be here with my daughter than let the system raise her, so I put up with it." So some of our limitations with our study was, one of them, the New York Times came out with an article right as we were starting our assessment. And it was prompted by the story that Elizabeth shared at the beginning of that child that was vomiting continuously and in pain and the delay in care. And all of the women at FFP were familiar with the article and had read it. And many of them had even participated in the investigation. And so at FFP, there was a real sense of community organizing amongst the women. And so they spoke sort of collectively, and they shared stories from other mothers. And at CPMP, while the mothers had read it, they spoke more from their own individual stories. And so this could be part of the differences that we saw between the two programs. Another one of our limitations was the outliers. While most of the women talked about their negative experiences with these programs, there were a couple that had great things to say about the program that really appreciated being there with their children.
And finally, we had to discard 4 of our key informant interviews because these were done with experts who had experience with other CPMP and FFP facilities statewide. And since we ended up focusing solely on Oakland and San Diego, we had to discard their information. But the information that we gathered from those key informants tied right in with the rest of our findings. And so it sounds like some of the situations may be the same in the other facilities. And now I'm going to pass it over to Vicky Gomez, who's going to talk about the recommendations.
Due to the findings from the health assessment, we collaborated with Legal Services for Prisoners of Children to develop some recommendations to address the issues that we identified. First being that LSPC would request a formal internal state audit so that these programs could be evaluated by the California State Auditor's Office. Second, we also recommended that LSPC would develop a formal presentation based on these findings and recommendations to the GRSC, the Gender Responsive Strategies Commission. This is a commission established by the CDCR in 2005 in order to develop gender responsive strategies to address the specific needs of female offenders. We also recommended that LSPC hire and work with independent researchers to gather information for legislative hearings that would help to increase the public's awareness of these issues. One of the really important things that we also felt was that there needed to be oversight, and to provide this proper oversight, that the California Department of Public Health's Maternal, Child, and Adolescent Health Branch be identified as the governing body of all mother-child prison programs in California. This would ensure better health outcomes for both mothers and their children. And in order to address the environmental issues that Laura spoke about, is that we wanted the CDCR to be accountable and to have to remediate all the mold and dust that was found in these facilities. And last but not least, most important, is to coordinate with the CDCR to hire a full-time nurse practitioner trained in maternal and child health to be housed at each facility and provide on-site health services. We would like to acknowledge and thank our community adjunct faculty from LSPC, Karen Shane, Cassie Pearson, and Donna Wilmot, who is with us today, as well as our SFSU faculty, Jessica Wolin, and our student teaching assistant, Pedro Arista. But most importantly, we would like to give special thanks to all of the women who participated in our assessment and risked potential retaliation for sharing their personal stories with us. This project would not be possible without their courageous voices. If you'd like to contact us or learn more about our project, please feel free to do so. If you're interested in what's happening now with our recommendations, you can contact me directly or contact LSPC, Karen Shane. And we just really want to thank you for your time.